by Boquist, and he does an inverted twist. Is he in? He is. Touchdown, Bo Boquist, and that could be your dagger.
Simon Rumpel has it. Simon inside the five. Sis boom ball. Simon Rumpel, his second touchdown today.
UND Football 360.
Isaiah trying to get outside, a stiff arm, shuts him down, 20, inside the 15, down to the 13-yard line. Oh, that right arm, that stiff arm in the book of Isaiah has given North Dakota a first down.
Analysis, commentary, news, and a look ahead. It's all things UND football. This is the UND Football 360 Podcast. With your hosts, Kelly Howe, Matt Nelson, and Dave McNamara.
Well, what did we learn last week? What will this week look like? UND returns home this week for the season home opener, where we have not lost since 1986. And that's a good feeling, guys.
We were talking off the air, Tank. We were both there.
We were.
At that game. I remember it. Nice. I remember beautiful. I was just a kid. What was I? 9 years old probably at the time.
1986. I was born in 77. So young buck up there, but watched a lot of games up there in that
era. Remember the guy who went loose on us. We talked about this in the past years. Johnny Bailey from Texas A&I at the time, I believe. And they became Kingsville, right?
Yeah, they did. I think that's where, is that where Johnny Randall played as well?
Yeah. Daryl Green, I think, too. I think he was there. Yeah.
Good football factory.
Yeah, I think it was, 62-45? Yeah. Something like that is what it ended up. It was a wild one. And that was in UND's days when they were throwing it. They were old school, kind of an Air Coryell type thing when San Diego Chargers were doing it. UND decided to do that with Corey Wall and the guys back in the day. And yeah, it was a fun game to be at. I remember it, but wasn't good for UND because Johnny Bailey was a little too much for us, Tank.
Yeah, everybody remembers that name from that era. So hopefully it's a better outcome this week. We haven't lost. Yeah, hard to believe 1986 was the last. What do you think has been the key for home openers for UND?
Well, combination. I don't know, man. Combination of typically a home opener might not be the strongest game of the year, whereas this year it's the exact opposite of that. But I mean, it's just,
I can't remember a time when we've played a top five team in the country, because what's Montana, four right now?
Four.
Yeah, so I don't, in recent memory, we haven't played a top five team in either D2 era or in the Division One area. The first game when I was up there, it was, you know, we played Crookston and
Moorhead.
Yep. The first game of the season. So, you know, more of like a scrimmage atmosphere, but I mean, it counted as a game, but, you know, kind of knew the outcome of it. And
I really liked that home and home we did with Bemidji that one year.
Yeah.
That was kind of cool. I think that was probably mid to late 90s.
My freshman year, first year on campus, we were at Bemidji.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they weren't.
Beautiful setting. Oh, I heard. Yeah. My folks were at that game.
Yeah. So. Beautiful. And then they came back. And yeah, it was good to do that. But yeah, that led to it a little bit. You know, it's just playing a team you can beat, but you still got to win them. And it doesn't always work out that way.
Let's talk about, do you guys like the evening kickoff? 6 o'clock kickoff for home opener? Yeah.
Yes, yeah. Love it. I'm glad they changed it up. They tried something new. Tailgating will be a different atmosphere than normal, just because people can get all their stuff out of the way. Youth football will be done for the day. Yeah, I like it. I mean, kudos to the athletic department for trying something new. You know, I mean, and the other thing where I don't feel bad about it, for as far as Montana goes and stuff, is we had to fly out west in the big sky for 6 o'clock kickoffs in California for how many years? And those teams didn't change their schedule one bit. Some of them were 7 o'clock kickoffs Pacific time. So you get back home at 4 a.m. So, you know, it's a night game and Montana will get home late, but I think it's worth it for the atmosphere.
When you're looking at the 1 and 2 o'clock kickoffs, does it make a difference when you're a player and you got to sit around those extra few hours on a Saturday?
I just slept later when we had later games. I just stayed up later the night before and then slept later. And just so, because, I mean, yeah, you can kind of, if you're up for too long, you just kind of think yourself in circles after too long.
Is it better they're at home and not at a hotel, probably?
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure.
Much better. Yeah, you can move around town. I mean, go around town, hop in your car, go get something. I mean, you can just kind of kill time and stuff. But
you're watching pretty closely on the road, too, right?
Yeah. Sitting in those hotels all day, that's not good for me.
We had the general keeping tabs on us, too, in my day. So
yeah, he was good at that job.
He was good. He was really. Yeah. We called him the general for the reason. So
UND Football 360 pregame show podcast brought to you by Rumors Sports Bar, Grill and Casino, Kelly's favorite hangout. If you're in Grand Forks, you're probably there, right? Or at the Alera Center?
Yep, one of the two. That's about it these days. There's no reason to not go to Rumors.
Your laptop works at Rumors, right? Development Home Inks, gaming, simulcast, horse racing, pull tabs, blackjack, the pig wheel. They've got it all. Kelly Howe Agency, Nodak Insurance, the Toasted Frog, fine dining in downtown Grand Forks and Fargo. We got the 1883 Collective, which is the NIL arm for UND Athletics. And if you don't know much about that, I recommend you look into that more and give what you can, because it's a big part of college athletics right now. Interstate Industrial, steam cleaning and painting in the Bakken oil fields. Marty Shade, thank you so much. And American Solutions for Business, Tank McNamara, can help you out with all your promotional products and corporate apparel. Well, Montana is coming this week, but let's talk about Iowa State, guys. What did you guys learn about UND in that first game?
Well, I thought we played pretty well for the most part. That's my overall impression of the game. I think we went down. It looked like we went to win the game. We weren't intimidated by Iowa State. We weren't intimidated by the fans by any means, and the larger crowd. So I thought that was really positive in our corner. I also liked that our predictions last week, I thought our defense stood out. I think we played much better on defense than what I anticipated personally, and I thought that our defense was really kept the game tight. I mean, we got three and out. We got three and outs, and I was pleasantly surprised with our defense overall. I think it was a good performance.
Yeah, you can tell by our predictions last week that we didn't know what was going on. You know, we didn't know what was going to happen. Nobody knew what was going to happen, and I said that to multiple people this week. I said, you know, I was wrong. I was just flat out wrong. I think after talking to some people up in Grand Forks, I think they knew what they had more than we knew what they had. There was a quiet confidence heading into the season that they think these kids, you know, along the O-line, along the D-line, you know, the secondary, you know, they can work out. They're going to work out. They're going to come together, you know, with Trevor Olsen running the offensive line. We'll get more into that in a little bit. But, yeah, it was what I liked about it, though, is it was fundamental. You know what I mean? Fundamental football. There wasn't the running game for Iowa State wasn't seeing huge holes.
No.
Where we had gap integrity issues.
Yeah, and then so, offensively, Iowa State had guys on their backs. And that was really promising to see.
It was
our
fun
offensive
to see,
line, I mean, granted, it's a different look than what we're normally used to seeing, but we were physical up front.
Yeah, that was the equalizer, I think, that what we didn't know about going in. It was the defense and the offensive line. Those were our two question marks coming into this season for us here. And I think we outperformed what our anticipations were. And I was happy. And watching that Iowa State game, it gives me a lot of I'm excited about the rest of the season, because I think it's a great way to improve.
Yeah, looking at the drive charts is one thing. You know, we all know about the 23 play 88 yard drive that captivated the attention of social media. Everyone got a hold of that one. They're like,
at play 13, were you guys going, we need to score on this?
Right.
That's all I was thinking about. Like, keep it going, keep the ball out of their hands, but we need to get points on the board.
We need to get in the end zone. Yeah. Yep, that was it. And we only got three, but I'm looking at these other 10 plays, 39 yards, 23 plays, 88 yards, 8 plays, 35 yards, 14 plays, 59 yards. So we had multiple drives where we moved the ball. We just couldn't get in the end zone. Obviously, you know, part of that, which people have to understand, if you watch the game, you know, we talked about it last week. We said ISU is a defensive backs. So what they were doing is sitting back, and they were not bringing any pressure whatsoever. So it didn't, it wasn't a huge surprise as the game went on that, you know, Isaac Frichte wasn't going deep, because the one time they went deep, it got picked off. Well, Romfo got hit, but it got picked off, and you just couldn't go deep because they weren't going to let you. And it, we knew that going in, but it was extreme. I mean, we were talking about off air. They were just, they put three up front. Linebackers were cautious.
Yeah.
And then as the game went on, they kind of inched their way up, and it started to get a little tougher to run. But there was nothing downfield because Iowa State didn't let us get it.
Right.
And so it's going to be different this week. There's going to be plenty of chances downfield this week, and we'll get into that in our preview.
What area surprised you the most watching that game? Because, like we said, the game was full of surprises. Like, if you had to pinpoint one thing, and to me, I think it was the O-line.
Right.
Watching the push they got. I was really, really excited to see that. For how many question marks we talked about there.
Right.
And to my recollection, I think we only had a couple breakdowns where our tackles kind of got off balance a little bit. Yeah. And we talked about it last week that they had dudes for defensive ends. And, you know, we knew that they were going to be a force to be reckoned with. And they got a couple plays on us. They got to Romfo a couple times, got him sacked, you know, broke up that play for the interception, got in his face. So I think those two plays, where he got sacked and then that interception play, was where we really noticed their talent level too, and where they took advantage of our junior talent levels. But other than that, I think we really outperformed and were pleasantly surprised. And there's only one way to go, is we're going to improve every week, right?
Well, and the 174 yards rushing, I mean, that was impressive. You know, big chunk runs. Some of them were on, you know, non-typical running downs. I mean, we were getting yards, and it was good in that way. Pass protection, you know, you're going to give that a C, C minus, because once again, they're new. We weren't good at protecting the passer last year.
No.
Okay, we had a veteran offensive line, and we didn't protect very well. We protected okay in this one at best. I know there was one sack where freshman Beecher on the left tackle gave up a sack. He just set up too wide. And I think you saw that one too.
Yeah,
the defensive end cut inside.
Yeah.
And I watched it back. I thought my first thought is, okay, did he think the guard was coming over to help? No, the protection was correct. But he just set up too wide. Well, it's because he's 19 years old and he's never played in a game before.
Right.
Let's understand these things, people. I mean, Jesus. It's like, and the same thing with, I put out the tweet. I felt like I had to calm people down about Romfo.
Yeah.
I mean, let's just calm down. He's never played before. He's never started. Okay, he's never started a game. Now he's starting at Iowa State in front of 56,000 people against a very good defense that runs a 3-3-5 unorthodox, you know, game plan. So...
And it's not like he had a month to get ready for this. He didn't know he was going to be the starter, right?
Right. Yeah, that's true. He had a couple weeks.
We just got to understand. You know, it takes time. And I thought he played okay. You know, it's not like I'm sitting here making excuses for him playing poorly. He didn't play poorly.
No,
he took off running when he was supposed to. He got 44 yards rushing,
and he didn't look flustered when he did that. Right? He seemed in control when he had to get going. So
yeah, no, I think we want to get in the end zone more. 21-3, you know, there's nothing to celebrate really. I think we're just happy, you know, with the way they went about their business. You know, the way they played and the way they, it was all the integrity up front on both sides of the ball was good. I really like the linebacker play. Solid. We figured that would be a strength, you know, the inside linebackers. And Josh Navratil, he had a really nice game, noticeable. Lance Rucker. So there's our outside backers, right? We talked about, hey, we got to see more. Well, there's two guys right there.
100%, yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. We'd like to see him get in the end zone. You know, we kicked the field goal attempt down 21-3, 7 minutes left. I sent out my thoughts on that. I mean, it's... Would it have made the difference in the game to make it 21-10? Maybe if you get lucky, but maybe Iowa State was probably just going to put the throttle down and maybe, you know, start going again on you. And you don't know. But my point is, it's more of a mentality. You know, like, okay, hey, I know it's 4th and 15 from the 16-yard line, 21-3, 7 minutes left. Let's go for it. Let's go for the end zone. A 16-yard throw into the end zone can be quick. That can be on a line. You know, you can get a one-on-one somewhere, you know, in the end zone. I would have liked to seen just a mentality thing like that. Like, hey, we're going to go try to win this game. But, I mean, they kicked the field goal. We didn't make it, which is, you know, I don't care that we didn't make it, really, because, yeah, whatever. I have my opinions. And I start, here's what I do, Tank. I start going off on my rats. Yeah. You'll get used to it. Matt just sits back.
I just let him go.
That's why we call this the Kelly Howe Agency Game Review, because right. You can do what you need to do over there.
There we go. Yeah.
What really stands out is, well, we need to get better this week.
Secondary play. Coverages. I mean, I think they... I don't know if it's necessarily... Yeah, they can always get better. None of them played before.
Yeah.
We got four new starters there too. So I would say putting them in better position. There was a few coverages there I don't think were going to work out real well. Like that seam route for the touchdown, I don't think the safety can get over there. It was a tough one. I think we had a linebacker trailing or something. It's just not going to work because it's so quick when you get down into the red zone. You know, stuff like that. You put them in a better position. And, you know, those kids battled, though. I mean, Hembry, Bluett, the safeties, those two safeties –
And Irk, but they were going against cupcakes.
No,
right? They had their hands full all day long. Yeah,
absolutely.
Those two are good. Those two receivers, Noel and Higgins, were. We knew they were good coming in. Well, they were good. You know, and
what was it? The first catch of the game.
Yeah, play two.
How about that picture of Russ Hans got of that?
Yeah. And then seeing that, reaching like, over the back. Great, it's going to be one of those days, I thought. And then, you know, we settled down and didn't get flustered.
Settled down
that.
Nicely.
Yeah.
Yeah. The defense, I thought, played solid. They were going to get beat. You know, obviously, the other team likes to make plays, too. So, you know, we're going to get beat at times. But they didn't get beat, you know, real badly. I mean, it was just overall my thoughts. I was encouraged for the rest of the season. Yeah. Can I leave it at that? And now we want to see more out of the offense because we're playing like opponents now, like defenses where we can, let's see what we got downfield. Let's try to, with the running game, try to see what we can combine and get in the end zone. You know, we just want more points, you know.
One thing we can talk about too, we have Isaac Frickte, his first game, right. OC and D1. Well, how do you think he fared?
I like the play calls. I like the tempo. I really liked taking our chances downfield. We went for it on, you know, third and long, you know, kind of unorthodox. I think we ran it on third down and I think we got one and we didn't get one on running on our run plays, but on third down. But I like the mix that he wasn't afraid to do that because he knew our running backs are good and Isaiah is a good running back. So give it to him and let him make a play, right?
Good 1-3 punch out of those three guys,
right? Yeah.
Wasn't it?
Yeah,
so it looked really good.
Yeah.
Those three, Seidel, he was electric. That one run he had out of the end zone, I remember. Jesus. I mean, I don't think Iowa State was ready for that because all of a sudden he was out of the end zone quick and got us out of trouble.
What did he get, like 18 yards on that first
one? Yeah, it was something like I'm like, okay, well, you know, he's not, I don't think from everything I've heard, he's not going to be our screen guy. I think he's going to be, I think Isaiah's our screen guy because he's natural catcher, you know, and Z-Barth's the inside power guy. Yeah. And he was hammering away again.
He was. He had a good game.
Seidel's the guy you just, you know, outside zone, you know, you try to get him crease, you know, that type of thing, find it and
watch him go.
Boy, yeah. Geez. And returning kicks. He'll get more chance, you know, now to return kicks and stuff. So, yeah, I like the running backs. That's nothing but good things to say about that unit.
How about injuries? You know, who was it that was in a knee brace after the game?
Braden Moore.
Yeah.
Yeah, defensive end. Yeah.
That looked bad when that happened.
The way he's braced up, the way they were checking it out, the way he walked off, you know, they walked with him.
Yeah.
It's never good, usually. That way, you got to hope for the best is what you got to hope for. Typically in those things from over the years, you know, we followed up with these on this show for so many years that they would know, I'm guessing, by today. They know, and they're hoping. You got to hope one of the major tendons is intact and probably, you know, if another one tore, maybe be the MCL, you know, a smaller one, And then you got some hope. That's what we got to hope for. But that kid was bad. He had a great spring, great summer. And he was a freshman. I mean, he was primed to play all season along next to Jack Tyken. We talked about him in the preseason. So that's what stinks. I mean, it's just those injuries and this is just, it's tough. Tough for these kids, especially when they're such good kids and they work so hard. And then the first game of the year.
Have you guys seen any other?
No, not much.
I think we're pretty healthy.
Yep. I don't think much. I mean, I think Iowa State, they had a few guys that got banged up. You know, but I think we made it out. I think we made it out okay, which is good.
And that's kind of what you worry about when you play up with the FBS, isn't it?
Right.
Like, let's just come out of it, get the paycheck, see what we can do, and come out as healthy as possible, right? And what did we get for that game?
Oh, boy. I didn't
track. Over 500, I think.
Yeah, over 500.
I think that's about standard rate.
I never really check. I should check.
I think there's
more
some that are paying now over a million right now, and it's getting ridiculous.
Yeah. It's inching up every year, and then I think they put their ahead of time, but these ADs, I think they got to project inflation. So you'll see like 2027, $625,000. So I think they must have a little, you know.
What do they know that we don't? Is that the inflation rate? Is that what it's going to be in 4 years from now?
Seems like it. Well,
the way we're going.
Right.
Well, you know, I think we all were happy with week one, and let's put that one behind us and look ahead to week two. Hey, look at that. It's time now for the Development Homes 360 guest, and we're happy to have Frank Agola on the line from the Missoulian and 406 MT Sports. Frank, I forgot to ask you before we started, did I get your last name right?
Yes, you did.
All right. You've been covering Grizz for over 5 years and the number 4 ranked team in the country. Not a bad gig when the team's doing well, right?
No, it's quite fun to cover them. It's quite the turnaround from where they were as a program the last time the Grizz made the trip out there to Grand Forks.
Right. Yeah, that was a good one, actually, for UND. If I recall, that was the 2018. I think Bobby Houck's first year. UND jumped on him early, and this Grizz team's a little different than that one, though. A little different animal coming to Grand Forks than that one. But I wanted to first jump into last week's game. Give us your thoughts on the Missouri State game last week. Heck of a game to watch. We were talking about it off air. It was just a fun, you know, fun opening football game of the year. Montana pulls away. Were you surprised with anything you saw with Missouri State, with Montana, just the way the game played out?
Well, I think the thought out here was it wouldn't be as competitive of a game as it ended up being. I think I picked the Grizz to win by a couple scores, but you know, they were missing 3 All-American players, and arguably their best overall player in Junior Bergen, who's, you know, All-American return man, All-Big Sky wide receiver, then missing their All-American linebacker in Riley Wilson, and All-American tight end in Cole Grossman. So there's a lot of key pieces to be missing, a lot of guys who are expected to be big playmakers this year, but they really showed the depth they have and their resiliency to bounce back from some early mistakes in that game and come back and be able to tough out that 29-24 win.
Frank, this is Matt. The 3 guys not playing is a question mark for us, but the other question mark was the quarterback position. Kay Ali Ayat and Logan Fife, it seemed like they rotated in and out a few times, and then they went to Logan Fife, and he ended up winning the game for them. Any insight on that? Are they just kind of testing the waters with both quarterbacks so far, or is it going to be one guy from here on out?
Well, Kay Ali Ayat played the first half and the first drive of the second half, and then Logan Fife played the rest of the game after that. Each of them finished with exactly 90 passing yards, both showed some ability to run the ball, and they each led at least one scoring drive with the Grizz trailing Missouri State on the scoreboard. So they showed both showed an ability to rally the team. Both of them on the two deep this week, again, listed with an oar. And, you know, this was something the Grizz did last year, also playing multiple quarterbacks to start the year with Clifton McDowell and Sam Bidlak. And they did that for the basically all non-conference before they got into their first Big Sky game, rotating guys, letting them play. And it was the plan they had was this time around was very similar to how they handled things last year. So see if that continues again during non-conference play. But just from watching the quarterbacks, I think they've got two great options there. And it feels to me like just the quarterback spot at a better point at this point in time than where they were last year. And we saw how last year ended up for them once they finally selected a quarterback and picked one and then let him be the guy throughout the rest of the season.
Frank, real quickly, going back to the three guys that were out last week, are they going to play this week? Are they making the trip? Do you know?
I have not been out to practice yet this week, but I am going today and we'll be able to get some eyes on who's all practicing.
Okay, so yeah, Riley Wilson, you mentioned him, the linebacker, very, very good player, obviously missing, you know, on the inside there. But Junior Bergen being out, game breaker, total difference maker. If I'm seeing this correctly, after watching that game, though, they're certainly not shorthanded at wide receiver, even if he doesn't play. I mean, would that be safe to say, Frank?
Definitely. Yeah, they've got what coaches going back to last year and this year have called the best wide receiver room in the Big Sky. And I think Ryan Baird at Missouri State said they were possibly the best wide receiver group in the FCS. Now, obviously, that's including Junior Bergen, who kind of headlines that room, but you throw in guys like Keelan White and Aaron Fonts as your other two starters. And then we saw Xavier Harris, who's almost a 1,500-yard rusher. I mean, they're just loaded at running back, so he's moved over to wide receiver playing in the slot, and he had the top game among the receivers in the opener. And then you add in a Washington transfer and Sawyer Racanelli, who came up in clutch moments last year, and he could go 6-7 deep, and they certainly rotated guys in there throughout the game last week.
Switching sides of the ball, defensively now, it appears they run a bit of a 3-3 look up front, maybe morph into a 4-man. Big guys along the defensive line, and they seem to really want to bring a lot of pressure, you know, a lot of movement up front with some angles and twists, that type of thing. Similar to what UND plays that way too up front. Who are some players that the UND fans could look out for, especially up front, you know, that seem to really wreak havoc in that Grizz defensive line?
Yeah, they do run that 3-3-5 stack defense, which Bobby Houck has been running since he returned to Montana in 2018. He kind of learned that while he was down at San Diego State as their special teams coordinator. He learned that from Rocky Long down there. Someone who really flashed and had a big game in the opener was defensive end Hayden Harris. Just career game for him with 3 TFLs, 2.5 sacks. It's a guy who transferred in from UCLA ahead of the 2023 season, and it kind of took him a while to get going, but just a massive opener for him. And, you know, this is really a very rebuilt defense. They lost multiple key starters at every level of the defense. And we really saw they kind of, you know, after making their national title run, were able to bring in some pretty high-profile transfers and guys who picked the Grizz over multiple FBS offers. And I'm looking at guys to watch, like Vi Cajo at linebacker, a San Diego state transfer. Pat Hayden, you know, came in and has slid in right at nose tackle for Alex Gubner, who was the Big Sky Defensive Player of the Year last year. And he came in from Monmouth. And then Andre Salerman, another grad transfer who came in from the MVSC out there at Youngstown State. And all of them had big statistical outings in their first game.
Looking ahead to this week, what's the have you been able to sense a feeling out there in Montana, heading to Grand Forks? You know, they know it's a tough, very tough environment, I'm sure. Bobby Houck's been there. They got a feeling like coming off last week. Is there uncertainty? Or are they still, or have does it feel like the Grizz program is to the point now where they went to Frisco last year? These games are just part of the deal. They look big picture, and they're a confident bunch heading up to Grand Forks.
Yeah, I would say Bobby Houck seemed pretty relaxed at his post-game presser, and then talking again with him on Monday. I think, you know, obviously there's a lot to correct. Like, third downs were not a great area for them. Tackling was not a great area for them. But, you know, they've gotten to this point in their program with the just the depth they have that, you know, that it's something, you know, I think they played at least 20 guys on defense. So, yeah, it looks like your kind of typical opener where you're playing a lot of guys, seeing what you have on the team. So even though there were some mistakes, it's things they can correct. And then they kind of, you know, hone in on who's going to be playing a bit more bigger role. But, you know, you got to see them in a game for the first time. I know they're certainly excited to see another MVFC team. It's been a while since that trip out to North Dakota in 2018, and just even since playing the UND at all, that none of the guys on this team have been there before. And I was going through the coaches. I think only three coaches on this the staff were on that 2018 team that went out there. But Bobby Houck certainly remembers that game because he brought it up unprompted in his opener to his presser and talked about it. So I'm sure he's excited to get out there and try to avenge that loss.
Frank, one last question for you. The college athletics in general is changing so fast. The 1883 Collective, the NIL arm for UND Athletics, proud sponsor of this 360 podcast. But it's hard not to think of Montana when you say FCS football. Where is Montana with all this right now? You mentioned some guys that turned down some other offers. Did that have anything to do with it? Are you guys a little ahead of the game for FCS right now?
Well, they have had what is they call the good old Grizzlies Collective. They've had that for quite a few years. I mean, they were kind of right on it right when it started, or when NIL, you know, became a thing you could go after. So they've certainly been on after that. I mean, right away, guys on the team were jumping at NIL opportunities. One that comes to mind is Junior Bergen, a guy who certainly had a ton of FBS interest this past off season, and was able to get some NIL deals. I mean, he's probably right up there with the most NIL deals. I mean, they got NIL deals for, you know, group of five players who are all in the business college have specific deal. So I think that, I mean, that definitely has to help. And I mean, you look across the athletic department, it's not just football. There's other players in other sports getting NIL deals. Even the Grizz women's soccer team, which is very regionally competitive program, and they even have their own team-wide NIL deal, which is kind of interesting, and I haven't heard a ton of for things like that. So, you know, just how, you know, ravenous the fans are at Montana, it's not surprising to me that they've kind of stepped up and supported
definitely a different world we're living in, and each year it gets different and more wilder and wilder. But we're looking forward to Saturday, Frank. I hope you enjoy your trip to North Dakota. Grand Forks is always a fun time this year in the Allaire Center. I'm sure the atmosphere is going to be fantastic, and we should be in for a great game. I hope you enjoy it, Frank.
All right. Thanks for having me on.
This is the UND Football 360 pregame show podcast, and right now it's time to look ahead. It's the Toasted Frog 360 game preview, and we are looking ahead to Montana. The Grizz coming to the Allaire Center Saturday night, 6 o'clock pregame. God, what if they open the tailgate lot at 6 in the morning? Wouldn't that be great? Yeah.
There'll be anybody people make there. It to the game? I don't
Do we know what time the lot opens?
I think 11.
11, yeah.
11. Oh, boy.
That's early.
That's still a long time.
In my younger days, I would have been there at 11. You're right. I can guarantee you I would have been there at 11.
Don't lie. You would have been there at 8, so yeah, waiting to get in.
Yeah, you know, sitting behind the barricade, waiting. No.
Well, you know, we look at Montana. They beat Missouri State last week, 29-24. I thought that would be a little higher score, didn't you, Kelly?
Yeah, it was interesting game. Missouri State is better than they're supposed to be. I think they're picked 9th in the Missouri Valley. They're better than the 9th team in the Missouri Valley because they look pretty good. They always bring in transfers, and I think that's part of it.
I was just going to say, did they hit the transfer portal again?
Yeah, they look pretty
50
good.
Guys?
Yeah. Yeah. It's not as bad, I think, as when Petrino was there, but it's they brought in guys, which they had to do, but they look pretty good. Their D-line was stout, and they were pushing guys back on the interior. Yeah, I was impressed by I think Montana was surprised too. I think it took them a little while. It obviously took them about 3 quarters, you know, but they end up pulling away late at 29-24 win for Montana. But yeah, it was probably a eye opener. I mean, it's not the best thing for UND, I guess, that they got their eye opener. I wish they'd have showed up, you know, at the Allaire Center, but I was impressed. It was a good football game. Great to watch on TV, back and forth. Montana asserted itself late. You know, started to come up with some plays and got 3 sacks, I think it was, on the final drive to kind of end the thing. But, yeah, I don't think we got Missouri State this year, do we?
No.
Yeah, we don't have them, so that's good.
You think Montana's experience kind of took over at the end?
Yeah, I think so.
A little winning, too much for them.
Yeah, winning mentality. Well, and it was close. I mean, it's not like – I'm not going to sit here and say Missouri State faltered or, you know – I think just being at home in a winning program, they just made a few more plays and, you know, got in the end zone and then held on, and, you know, credit to them. They won the game late, but they were losing for a decent part of it. And Missouri State was moving the ball. They were confident unit out there. They had a good game plan too. Big running back, big physical running back. Jeez, he was good. But yeah, it was a fun football game to watch, but it was good to see what we're up against, because Montana has talent. When you watch them out there, they got good-looking guys. And like we said, the 50-yard line test, I say every year, you know, look left, look right. And I think Montana's going to win this week because they got some good look, especially on the D-line, which we'll get to in a little bit.
Well, let's talk about the defense, because it is a similar look to what we saw last week at Iowa State. But it looks like they're going to mix it up a lot more than Iowa and probably bring more people and have more people in the box for that running game.
Yeah, I think, now they got tape on UND. So I think before we get into the Montana defense, what I'm sensing out of Grand Forks right now is we are going to run the ball straight ahead and we are going to try to maul you, and that's it. And if it doesn't work, then they're going to have to come up with something else, run some RPO, you know, stuff like that. But I think that's what Frickty and Trevor Olson are installing this year. Is Danny had the inside running game going well last year, but it was with movements and shifting, and, you know, it was different. But they still would just plow straight ahead. I think this year it's going to be more deliberate. I think they're just going to tell you, these guys along the O-line, we're counting on you to beat your guy and push him down the field. okay, thanks. Let's go. You know, I mean, there's no two ways about it. They're just going to make it. I mean, did you get that feeling, Matt, last week?
A little bit. And, and you know, that's comforting to know that that's our mentality, too, where it's that gives your O-line some confidence, where you get to pin your ears back and, you know, decomplicate some things and just let the guys go and play football. So that's exciting because, you know, I think our running game, our inside game, has gradually improved. And maybe this is the one final piece that we needed where, nope, straight ahead, Missouri Valley Conference football, and we're just going to pin our ears back.
And speaking of which, now UND's O-line coach Joe Pavlik went to Montana last year, right? So he'll give him some insight on the players. You know, there's something to be said for that. He'll go, this guy can do this, this guy, you know, moves his feet well, this guy doesn't, that type of thing. But from everything I was told in the off season, the reason why Bobby Hauk called up to Grand Forks and wanted to speak to Joe Pavlik is because he wants to run a Missouri Valley offense. That's what he wants to get to. He knows he can't win if you don't play like South Dakota State and NDSU and, you know, the Missouri Valley teams are playing. He knew that, and he came out and basically said it. Hey, I want to change our mentality up front. I want to try to maul some guys, and we can do our other. You can always do your other stuff. But if you don't have that base to lean on, you know, that's when teams get in trouble. You can't hang in the playoffs. You can't, you know, and that's what UND's wanted to get to, and they're getting closer, but they haven't quite got there. And I think that's what Hauk wants to go to, is that same thing that I just spoke about, to where he has physical, mean offensive linemen, and he wanted an O-line coach who could teach that. And that's kind of what, you know, Pavlik did at UND last year. So, yeah, it's a... it'd be interesting dynamic, because that's what they want to do. Now, last week they had 130 some yards rushing last week against Missouri State, but it's a work in progress.
You got to get the right personnel in there, right?
Well, and teach them. Yeah, and teach them and see what they're made of, that type of thing. But I thought that was an interesting little tidbit, is how they know, you know, Montana. They made the national championship game last year, so they know they're close. They know Montana, you know, we're here, we're close, but we know who we have to beat, is the point. So yeah, it was interesting. But hey, no, defensively though, I got off topic. Defensively, Montana, Tank, you brought it up, 3-3. Looks like a 3-down. They'll morph to a 4-down. You know, but on paper they line up with the 3-3-5 type of thing, but it's the opposite of Iowa State. It's twisting, stunting, bringing linebackers and all gaps. They're moving all over the place. Kind of like Weiss.
Right, kind of like exactly UND. Like us, and then that's where that Big Sky Conference defense kind of comes into play. Where, you know, when we were back in the Big Sky, we saw stunting, and you know, things got kind of crazy because you had these wide open offenses, and you know that West Coast offense style was notorious in the Big Sky. So I think we're going to see a little bit more of that, and that's how you play defense against that too, is just try to get to the quarterback and try to throw the offense off.
With our young offensive line, this will be a bigger test then, because they got to be on the same page when they don't know where stuff is coming from. So does that worry you a little bit with the youth up front?
That's a good point, Tank.
We might see some you know, some gaps that you know, some areas that we miss the guy coming through, the stunting, the twisting. You know, we're going to see all of that this week. So you know, so they Montana might pick up on that watching the Iowa State game. Okay, we got, you know, these tackles got a little wide here. We think this is an opportunity. We'll run this play here on this short yardage play. And so I think Montana's going to take advantage of our youth on the O-line and take advantage of some of those guys.
I suppose the nice part about that is we're at home and not in front of 24,000 people trying to communicate up front.
We just got to remember to be quiet when we're on offense so we can methodically think through things.
Tell the guy running the music, too. Play a little something calmer when we're on offense.
Right, yeah. I don't think you got the memo last year.
When we're on offense.
Just when they're on offense. When we're on offense, just, you know, hit pause.
Let the band play when we're on offense. Yeah, little in-between music. So
you think so? No, but look at the box score from last week. I mean, they want to create a little chaos up front, and they want to use their talented
four sacks.
Defensive line, 10 TFLs. Right. That's the number I'm looking at. So, like, back to your point, there's going to be leakage. They're going to get through, and they're going to make a few plays. Just stick with the game plan and know that's a nice thing about if you want to run inside zone, outside zone. UND is going to run every zone you got this week because that's what you want to do. You catch them going one way, you just go. And it's up to the running back to figure out where the hole is now becoming, you know. That's how it works against these teams. UND's done that for years. UND defensive line, twists, stunts, teams started going to zone. Protections will be huge in this one for UND. I could see them. We're going to have to protect a little more. I don't think we're going to send four down the field a whole lot. I don't know why. There would be no reason to, you know, because you wouldn't be able to get very far down the field before you had to get rid of it. So, you know, slide protect. Like what teams did against UND in the Big Sky is they figured out Northern Arizona was the king of it. Slide protect, wham, you swipe the tight end across to pick up the, it was an insert, kind of insert the tight end. And so you're blocking with seven, and you'd send, you know, you keep a running back in, and you'd send two, maybe three downfield, and UND couldn't get there. So we're bringing all this pressure, and we could never get there. And Northern Arizona figured it out years ago, and they were getting after us. Well, it was the game 2016 when we came back. We were down big, and Deion Harris picked that one off to win it, you know, and we ended up winning the Big Sky Championship. But in that game, we couldn't get to him. That little lefty quarterback, he just stood back there and was just carving us up because, you know, the slide protection. I think that's what UND, you know, if they want to go, let Bo work, let Caden Dennis work, let these guys work one-on-one because that's what you're going to get. If a team brings pressure, well, they can't cover with safeties downfield. It's going to be one-on-one.
So I was thinking, you know, last week we talked about maybe week two. We're a little more worried about week two than Iowa State. Do you guys feel a little better going into week two after what we saw?
Yeah,
oh, much better.
I saw what I needed to see in week one against Iowa State. Yeah. I think it's a great way to it was a great benchmark against a good opponent in the Big 12, and I think it's a great platform to be able to build and improve upon. And that's where a lot of your improvement happens is between week one and week two, okay? You start to gel a little bit, and then you know, you get rid of all the distraction of playing a Big 12 opponent, and then now you're at home, first home game. Yeah, it's exciting for the players to just kind of relax a little bit and then come home, play football.
Yeah, this Montana defense, guys, just looking at my notes here, they start 10 seniors.
Oof.
Yeah.
Oh, and
veteran
to be
unit.
In the national championship game last
right,
year.
Yeah,
right,
they yeah. They got some experience. So, yeah, it's a good unit, good players. Yeah, their defensive line is just, they got a few guys that are big guys. I got to look at the...
just to your point, ooh. Kelly, 10 tackles for loss for 38 yards, and then 4 sacks for 27 yards, and 4 quarterback hurries. So they get in your face quick, and then they're in right. the backfield in a hurry.
Romfo's going to have to run.
Yeah.
He's going to have to run.
There'll be opportunities for him, though, because of that. There'll be opportunities if he can pick up.
And that'll be exciting to see, right?
He has the ability
really
to do that.
We haven't seen this on a regular basis for a while, right?
No. Yeah, it'll be interesting. Guy to watch, though, number 48. Well, if you know, you guys noticed him last week, Hayden Harris. Big defensive end. I transfer out of UCLA. 6'5". 3 tackles for loss. 2.5 sacks last week.
Yeah, he had half the...
Yeah, something's gotta happen with UND. You know, early downs, okay. You know, we do what we do, but if we get ourselves backed up on third and long, they gotta make some decisions. You know, Isaac Frickty's gotta make some decisions here. We can't let guys, you know, we got a freshman left tackle. They're gonna notice that on tape, and they're gonna be figuring out ways on third and seven, you know, third and eight to get him loose. He was a good Vi Cajo number 0. He was another one, made a bunch of plays last week. I'm like, there's going to be a lot of chaos up front, and it'll be interesting to see because it's the opposite. Like we said last week, Iowa State was 3 down and just came straight ahead. This week, it's going to be twisting, stunting all over the place. So, yeah, it'll be an interesting one to see this if we can take the next step in this one offensive-wise.
Quarterback-wise for Montana, what are we going to see? They've got 2 guys on their depth charts, one of those or positions. Are we going to see them both?
I think so. They saw them both last week. Yeah, I was in. They had Kaeli Ayat. You know, Clifton McDowell, the quarterback from last year, transferred out. I think he was going to go to Temple. Temple dropped him. Something fell apart there. He ended up at McNeese. So you go from, you go from Montana starting to McNeese. That's not a good move, you know, and whatever. But he was good. He's a good player. They ran him, though. So he was their running. Once they inserted him, he didn't start the year, but once they inserted him, their running game took off. Their offense took off. And he left in the offseason. Now it seems like they're kind of in ID mode again here, trying to figure out what they got. You know, Ayotte started the game. He played, let's call it roughly half the game, maybe a little more. Logan Fife, the transfer, about a 6'6", 205 kid, transfer from Fresno State. He came in and pretty much finished it. Played well. He won the game, you know, and it. I don't know. I just don't know if they know what they got yet, because they did this last year. You know, they started a different kid, and down at Northern Arizona, they just got pounded, and they looked terrible, and then I think they made the move to McDowell, and it changed their season around. They went to the national championship. I'm getting those vibes again, where I don't think they know who's number one, so they're going to play them both and just, you know, ride the hot hand. Neither are very big guys, you know, both 6 foot, 6'2" range. But, yeah, it seemed like Ayotte could move around a little bit. Yeah, he looked all right. Quick kid. But Fife, you know, he's got the experience because he played at Fresno State.
The nice thing if you're a Montana quarterback is you got a couple guys you can throw the ball to.
Yeah, we're going to have our hands full with Harris this week. Xavier Harris, he looked good.
One touchdown. Keelan White, 6'2", 180. He didn't do as much last week, but he was good last year. Obviously, Junior Bergen was out week one. He's probably the most dynamic player in the country. He was out last week. They say ankle, whatever. But, you know, it's something. But I don't know. I don't know if you bring him back for this one, but it's, you know, if it truly is an ankle that's close, I don't know if you bring him back for this type of game. But then again, you don't want to drop this game either because it would hurt your resume for later, you know, later. So I don't know. That'd be a difference because he's their kick returner. He's their returner, and he's the best returner in the country. So that changes things there too. So I don't know if I haven't heard anything.
If you're Montana, would you bring him back?
Well, we don't know. I mean, well,
I know,
yeah,
but don't you? If it were you.
If it's 50-50, yeah, probably. And you got to win this game. You don't want to drop this one, and then all of a sudden, you know, you drop one to Montana State or SAC during the year, and all of a sudden you have two losses, and you're out of, you know, you're a lower seed type of thing. You know, just thinking big picture, they plan on being back in Frisco. So, I don't know. It'd be interesting to see if he's there, because that's the guy. That's their guy, and that's the guy everyone has to worry about. I mean, we certainly, if Junior Bergen's on the field, we certainly aren't leaving our first-year corners on an island with him, are we? I mean, I don't think so, but you never know. But, yeah, they got playmakers, and they'll go downfield too. So I think the key if you're a Fighting Hawks fan is defending the deep ball this week. I think they're going to run the ball. They're going to get some yards on the ground because they're good at running it. Gilman, running back. We recruited him hard. We were in the final. I think we were in the final two or three. I remember he put something out, and Montana got him, and we wanted him pretty bad. I mean, how nice. We'd have Gilman besides the other running backs we had, too. He's good.
Oh, wouldn't that be cool?
Yeah. But he's a heck of a player.
Yeah, he ran for 90 yards last week, 15 attempts. Didn't lose too much yardage, so he's straight ahead and falls forward. So,
yeah,
are they going to be able to push us around up front? Did they impress you up front?
Well, yeah, they can.
Obviously, we talked about they're changing things up front now, but
they'll get some stuff. Yeah, I mean, they're big kids up front, veteran group, juniors and seniors. So, yeah, I mean, Montana's going to get some stuff up front. There's no doubt. I'm not, you know, our D line isn't a dominant physical D line, but we're going to try to move. Try to get by them. I think they had a few issues last week. I remember at right guard got pushed around a little bit, got backed up. But that was also the defensive end across from him was a monster, just wrecking stuff in there. So I don't know if we have that type of player who will do that. So, it'll be interesting. I just, once again, you know, we're sitting here just like last week. We don't know how it's going to go down. And this week we have a better idea. We're more confident in UND, but how does it translate to, you know, a top three team in the country? Jeez, I don't know. once again, I think I got to watch another week before I get more confident in what UND can do.
Yeah, I think it's a good setup for us. I think just being at home with the type of situation that Montana's in right now, and if they don't have their couple guys that will help them, I think it's slanting more towards in our favor. Personally,
well, we could say there is some talk that maybe not everyone will be making the trip for various reasons, and we don't know who that's going to be.
There's a couple guys. There's a couple guys that they're star players that are questionable. I don't know what the reasons are, but they didn't play last week. And if they make the trip this week, that would certainly be a game changer for them, where I'd be like, I don't know if this is looking too good for us.
I think this is one where special teams has to jump up again, just like the NDSU game last year. You know, you return a kick, you block a punt, things like that, big punt return, something to get the, because the fans are going to be juiced. So we know that. It's going to be a big crowd. Fans are going to be juicing.
Lots of Montana people, too.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a close game for them. I mean, they'll be coming over, traveling across North Dakota to watch us. So.
Oh, yeah. It'll be a very, very fun atmosphere. I mean, I think the hype I'm feeling is, you know, not quite the NDSU game last year, but it's there because it's the home opener, and everybody knows Montana's good. So, you know, so the Alaris magic.
Let's do our job. On first down, let's get up out of our seats and cheer, right? Yeah. On defense. We don't have to wait till third down.
Might as well be yelling
on first
down.
Let's do it right away. Because it makes a difference.
False starts.
Huge difference in that
building. Well, as soon as the fans, too, realize that the other team got a false start, we're making a difference. Now they're getting louder.
Let's start building that so it's every game up as soon as our defense takes the field. And it's going to make it tough for them to communicate. We've seen many good offenses come in and struggle with the noise, especially early on. So.
Well, UND wins in the Alaris Center, for sure.
I always love it when the quarterback puts his hands over his ear holes trying to be able to hear the microphone inside. So that's the telltale sign if you're not loud enough.
Or trying to communicate with the O-line.
Right, yeah, exactly.
It's not going anywhere. So do you guys have a gut feeling on your predictions? You ready? This early in the week?
I think I might be dialed in. Yeah. Who's going first? I mean, Wait a minute. Who won or lost last week?
I don't know. I did 38-17. What'd you do?
I think offensively we all missed quite.
Right. Yeah.
We're all way over.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm thinking 28-24 UND. Why not?
24 Hawks. Yeah. I could see that. I mean, I think there'll be some points. We scored three. So now I'm pausing again because we only scored three. But you know, you're going to see a different playbook this week than you saw last week.
And at home.
Yeah, and at home, and you know, not outdoors, 87 degrees on grass. You know, it'll be a little different. Jeez, Matt.
Yeah, I'm going with that home opener luck. It's going to be on our side.
There you go.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be a tight ball game. I don't be surprised if we might be down at halftime on this one, though, because I think they could come out and wheel and deal and get a jump on us just as good as any team. So I think it's going to be a slugfest in the first quarter. I think it's going to be whoever makes the first mistake is going to come up on top by halftime. So I wouldn't be surprised if we might be down by a score at halftime. But I think just with being at home, our guys being able to settle in, and then we still have that swagger of playing at home. We're really good at the Alaris Center. And even when we had some down years, it's like, okay, we got these guys at home. We have a chance. On the road, we don't have a chance. So there is something to say about that. But I'm thinking 31-28 UND. It'll come down to the fourth quarter. I think we'll have to test our kickers this week.
Don't say 7-3.
Don't make us look bad. Right.
4-3.
You guys are way off. Right.
How'd you get 4?
Nothing.
Yeah, two safeties this week.
I think the early line I saw Montana's favored by 4.5. Which makes sense. I believe it. You know, anything different would probably be a surprise. But, I'm torn. I go back and forth just because, you know, Montana still seems, just after watching last week, it still seems like they're trying to figure out their identity on offense, you know, which is understandable. UND's trying to figure out their identity on offense, which is understandable. And defensively, I think we know what UND brings. I think we know what Montana brings. So it's like the defenses are kind of settled in, but the offenses are finding their way. And I don't quite see it as high scoring this week. I know I've been very wrong before, but I think the homer in me is going to come out. I think UND can win this one just because it's at home. And they're close. I mean, they're close. They're not as talented as Montana. No, they're not. No, they're just not. Montana's good. They were in the national championship last year for a reason.
And they returned a lot of their guys. So.
Right, a lot. And so,
what's your score?
But it's early. But then I'm thinking, no, okay. Okay.
He's sandbagging.
He's sandbagging. Okay, here's a 24-23 Ox.
Ooh.
Late field goal puts us up. Crowd goes crazy. They get the ball back. Minute and change left.
You can't copy me.
We stop them. 24-23.
On like a big sack.
Yeah, but it's field goal comment.
No, to win it.
Oh, late. To win it.
And late. They get the ball back. Oh, okay. And we get a stop. I mean, I'm adding details here, you know, that how exactly it's going to play out. And then, but they have to get in field goal range or get a fourth down stop. That's what I'm envisioning.
If that's the case, I'm having extra Pepto for breakfast on Saturday. But no, make it through that fourth quarter.
Yeah, we'll see. But it's going to be fun. Regardless, Grand Forks is going to enjoy Saturday. It's going to be a fun
nice day. Nice day, too, I think.
Season 70s. Opener. Yeah, we haven't lost at home on a home opener since 1986. Had a good showing in Ames last week. We want to bring it home against the number 4 team in the country. We're going to need the fans there loud the entire game. Pre-game tailgating opens at 11. There's no reason for you not to be there on Saturday. We are looking forward to it. Thanks to all of our sponsors, Rumors Sports Bar, Grill and Casino, Development Homes, Inc., Kelly Howe Agency, Nodak Insurance, Toasted Frog, Fine Dining in downtown Grand Forks and Fargo, the 1883 Collective, that NIL arm for UND Athletics, Interstate Industrial, Steam Cleaning and Painting in the Bakken Oil Fields, Marty Shade and American Solutions for Business, Tank McNamara with all your promotional product and corporate apparel needs. Let's get to Saturday. I can't wait any longer.
Go Hawks.
6 o'clock kickoff. Montana, UND. Should be a fun one. Thanks for joining us.